This is the Jeff Horovitz Show on 97.1 The Big Talker.
All right, folks, looks like President Trump's hopes are dashed in Arizona. We'll talk about that, plus Congressman Paul Gosar and much, much more. The Jeff Horovitz Show weekly roundup starts now. Welcome, folks. Thanks for listening. Jeff Horovitz here. Hope you're all having a great day. I'd love to hear from you. The Just Wireless listener line is always open for you 24/7, 877-971-3971. Also, don't forget to go to the website. You can get all my social media links, as well as we've received a ton of traffic, and thank you for that, regarding the articles we've been consistently posting up there. Go to talkwithjeff.com. talkwithjeff.com. Couple of the posts up there right now. Top pinned post is show number 995 from yesterday. This is a lengthy exclusive interview with Senator-elect Wendy Rogers, and she really shares a lot of information. So if you missed the show and you didn't hear it, please go to talkwithjeff.com and check that out and learn about your new senator and how she decisively really won that race for LD6 despite, I mean, millions and millions, what, $4 million or something coming into this race, independent expenditures, outside money. And also I have links to the other big legislative District 6, which was race, which was the big news this week. And let's get you a few news roundups here before we get to the interview I did a couple days ago with Congressman Paul Gosar, but the power went out, so we never got to that. And I think it's a real important interview because it talks about our election integrity, this Dominion software and issues in, you know, several states, including Michigan. So stick around for that. But looking at talkwithjeff.com, the big news that we posted earlier today is Biden holds on to lead in Arizona with few votes remaining. And the reality is, barring, you know, some kind of recount, which we'll get to here in a little bit, and I think you'll be shocked at what the bar is for recounts in Arizona. It's so low. It's kind of crazy, and I think that law is going to have to be changed. But barring legal maneuvering by the Trump campaign, Biden's holding on to Arizona. There's less than 10,000 votes were remaining to count when we posted this, and Biden's lead stands at 11,434. So you do the math on that. There's 10,000 votes remaining. Biden is leading by 11,434, which, you know, when I was talking to some folks down at the legislature earlier this week, they thought that Trump would get to around the 8 to 12,000 mark. And even George Califf from Data Orbital started talking about that later in the week. Such a close margin in many states that would trigger an automatic recount, but not here in Arizona. So with that, and you remember, Fox News projected Biden was going to win Arizona like 3 minutes after the election, you know, on Tuesday, which many of us thought was premature. And really it was, because this is a super razor thin margin here in Arizona, 49.41% to 49.07%. So, you know, super close, less than a half point difference. You can't call an election that early when so many votes are still remaining to count. So hopefully a lesson learned for the future. But with that, Biden, you know, looks to be getting, unless there's some kind of legal challenge, the 11 electoral votes in Arizona puts him at 290. And of course, 270 is the magic number. Now, and we'll get into this with Congressman Gosar's interview. There are challenges going on in Pennsylvania and Michigan. So, you know, it's still possible, but the probability, in my opinion, like I've been saying for a while now, it is low, but I will remain hopeful and cross my fingers here. But the only real avenues left are the recount in Georgia. And then, of course, some legal challenges that's going on. So we'll see. Love your thoughts on this, folks. 877-971-3971. All right, let's get on to a couple other topics here. Assuming Biden becomes president, this should concern all of us. And I told you, and I told people, and you told me, we all knew this. You know, and I did interviews about this. What's this election about? And I said, this election is about national lockdowns and not locking down. Lockdowns versus not locking down. National mandates versus local control. And sure enough, and this one's up at talkwithjeff.com as well. I think this one's important to share. Biden advisor proposes a 4 to 6 week national lockdown. So this is one of Joe Biden's coronavirus advisors that he appointed like Monday or something. And he's suggesting a 4 to 6 week national lockdown to battle the recent spike in COVID. His name's Michael Osterholm. And he did an interview with Yahoo Finance, like an hour long interview. And it talked about controlling this virus and protecting the U.S. economy. So, you know, you're going to protect the U.S. economy, apparently, by locking down to 4 to 6 weeks. So this guy's citing low interest rates. So he's saying, hey, basically, no, he's not saying basically. Here's the quote. We could pay for a package right now because of low interest rates. Keep in mind, we could pay for a package right now to cover all of the wages, lost wages for individual workers. And then he went on to suggest that small businesses would also receive bailouts during this national lockdown, this 4 to 6 week national lockdown. Now, I want you to keep in mind the federal budget deficit right now for October. It just broke through the records from last year. Just for the month of October was $284 billion. One month. And the federal budget deficit for the year is well over $3 trillion, which I think we're going to look back on, you know, if Biden gets in there and next year with, you know, if it's like Treasury Secretary, Elizabeth Warren, you know, $3 trillion is going to seem small because they're going to crank, they're going to juice this thing up to $5, $6 trillion. And now the national debt, and you can go check this out at debtclock.org. And again, we got a link for that right on talkwithjeff.com. National debt clock, national debt currently stands at a staggering $27 trillion. And again, we're going to blow through that number next year. You watch. We're going to be at $30 trillion before we know it. Hey, keep in mind, I have my 1,000th show coming up. And yesterday we said it was next week. It's actually going to be the week of Thanksgiving. I think that Monday, Tuesday, we'll have the exact date for you next week. My 1,000th show, we're coming up on, you know, entering the fifth year of me doing this show. And I think when I first started this show in January of 2017, I just thinking back top of my head, I think the national debt was around $17 trillion maybe. Now we're at $27 trillion. We'll be at $30 trillion. By time we get in here into next year, and then if Biden gets in, which looks, you know, super likely, can you imagine what that national debt is going to go up to? So he went on, this guy Osterholm, to tell Yahoo that if we impose this national lockdown, here's a quote, then we could lock down, you know, because folks, keep in mind, we're in such good financial condition, and our country's, you know, in such a fine position to fund a national lockdown and pay everybody to sit home and watch Netflix. But anyway, quote, then we could lock down for 4 to 6 weeks. And if we did that, we could drive the numbers down. You think? And he goes on, like they've done in Asia, like they did in New Zealand and Australia. Now, Australia and New Zealand, they did keep the numbers down. I mean, they locked down when they had a couple hundred cases and you know, or very few deaths, I mean. And, you know, they locked down, but it was draconian lockdowns. And meanwhile, you know, countries in Europe, they locked down. Spain and Italy, Great Britain did this lockdown, last spring or so when the U.S. started locking down. And as soon as they opened back up, the numbers went back up again. If the lockdown worked, it would work. So Great Britain did their lockdown. They opened back up. And guess what? They're in another lockdown, at least a 4 week lockdown into December. So if it worked, like I said, wouldn't it be working? I said this from the beginning. I had experts on this. You know, I had other folks on this that said the same thing. Congressman Biggs comes to mind. The lockdowns won't work because the virus is going to be waiting for you. Now, there's some hope here that there's going to be a vaccine coming out that's effective. You know, we talked about this, you know, earlier in the week. It was positive. So some of these people are thinking, oh, we lock down and we come out and then there's the vaccine and oh, everybody's happy. But not if we're bankrupt. Look at the suicides. Look at the depression, the people sitting at home, people getting even more obese. And as you get more obese, you're more prone to negative effects and even death from coronavirus. Our kids are at home, you know, our kids in Arizona, some more schools are starting to re-lock down because of the spikes. So we'll see. We'll see. Lockdown, I don't know if it's going to be constitutional here, you know. in the United States. They can do these kind of things in Great Britain and Spain and Italy and Australia and New Zealand. I mean, I guess basically everywhere in the world. Are we the last bastion still? We'll see. With a Biden presidency, you know, if there's a national lockdown. I don't think they can do it constitutionally, but will governors fight back? Will people fight back? Or will they buckle? Look, I didn't think that you could do a national eviction moratorium either. I thought that was a state's issue. I don't even think that's, you know, constitutional for the states to do it, but another argument for another day. But perhaps they'll figure out a way to weasel through the CDC like they did with the national rent moratorium, a national lockdown. Maybe. Now, Governor Ducey, you know, he did the lockdowns early on. That's when I lost my faith in the governor. To a little bit of his credit, he's backed off that and he's indicated that he will not do another lockdown in Arizona. You know, that's what he said. But there's mounting, you see the articles out there. There's mounting pressure from the media and from all kinds of groups, especially the teacher union groups. They'd love another lockdown. There's mounting pressure for the governor to re-lock down Arizona, or at least do a partial closure. It ain't going to work. I mean, if you want me to be on the advisory committee for this stuff, I would gladly share with you that this is not going to work, because if it would work, it would have worked already. Common sense just seems to be completely out the window. So go check out that article, folks, and I'd love your thoughts on it. Please comment within the article. Biden advisor proposes 4 to 6 week national lockdown. There's a lot of articles out there as well on this, and this Federal Reserve head of one of the banks, I can't remember which one exactly it is, but his last name is called Cash Carry. He also thinks that this is a good idea as well, because we got plenty of money to do this. And you know what? One of the things is when you have digital money, it makes it a lot easier to just, you know, add some zeros on the screen, or maybe even deposit money directly into people's accounts. And we've talked about this before. I had on guests Robert Kiyosaki. We talked about it with a legendary investor out of Singapore, Jim Rogers. And it's the push to a digital currency. And it's coming. I think it's already here. I talked to a person yesterday, and we were talking about just how we pay for things. I don't know how we got into this conversation, but they say, oh, I use Apple Pay for everything. Mostly, and this is a younger person. Most people, especially younger people, they don't use cash anymore. I mean, it could be a dollar item, you know, dollar coffee if you can find it anymore. And they'll whip out the card or the phone. Now, there's this article in Bloomberg, Lagarde. Says her, quote, hunch is that ECB, European, you know, central bank, will adopt a digital currency. And she's the president of the bank. Christine Lagarde signaled, this is straight from this article on MSN.com, signaled that her institution could create a digital currency within years in what would be a dramatic change to the Eurozone's financial sector. Quote, my hunch is that it will come, Lagarde said Thursday during a virtual panel discussion hosted by the ECB. If it's cheaper, faster, more secure for the users, then we should explore it. If it's going to contribute to a better monetary sovereignty, a better autonomy for the euro area, I think we should explore it. And this is coming everywhere. It's already really here, like I said, but this digital currency is coming everywhere. And the biggest thing, and again, talking to, you know, to really smart people like Jim Rogers and others, they're going to be able to track every single transaction you make. And the big thing that they could do with a digital, you know, electronic currency is they could pump the economy any way they want. So, you know, $27 trillion debt is nothing. They could pump the economy. They could say, Jeff, we're going to put 5,000, you know, digital bucks in your wallet, your digital wallet. But the trick is you got to go out there and spend it within 30 days. It's like a stimulus package. It's much easier to pump the money into the economy that way. But they could also do the reverse. They could have a taxation where they say, we're having a little bit of trouble right now. We're gonna take some money out of your account. Plus, they could say something like, hey, Jeff, you're drinking a little too much coffee. You know, we got this new national, what is he calling it? Biden Care program, where we're checking on you and making sure you don't have too much coffee or sugar or whatever. We noticed in your digital account that you may have gone a little too far this month, which is probably the truth, but I don't need the government to say that. Anyway, just food for thought. Digital currency coming. Love to hear from you. Go ahead and comment. Our Just Wireless listener line, 877-971-3971. All right, let's come back with this interview with Congressman Paul Gosar. Hang tight. Back in a minute.
You're listening to The Jeff Horovitz Show. Be part of the program by calling 877-971-3971.
All right, folks, welcome back. Earlier in the week, Tuesday, I caught up with Congressman Paul Gosar. Many of you probably didn't hear this because we had a little electrical outage. But one of the first questions I asked him was, what happened in Michigan with the Dominion software?
Yes, so what the software ended up doing is taking 6,000 votes from Trump and moved them into Biden. So that's 6,000 one way, 6,000 another, that's a 12,000 vote swing. And that's the same thing that it looks like happened in Wisconsin, just that this.
And they've launched legal challenges in Michigan and Wisconsin over the software. Do you see the same thing happening in Arizona, Congressman Gosar?
Well, they haven't done that one yet. What they're looking at is people that were in line that voted and had their ballots tossed. There's a couple other aspects that they're looking at as well. But from that standpoint, the software seems like it's got kind of a random selection, and the reason it's random is so people don't catch it up. And I can illustrate this by this fact. So what ends up happening is particularly in Michigan, Minnesota, and Wisconsin, there were a bunch of ballots that were only the president and the senator race. No down ballots were put in. There's a bunch of these ballots. And the reason that is speculated is that you would see these ectopic irregularities with a smaller population base. So that's why they skipped over it. That tells you something was going on with the ballots in those areas. These algorithms are written by people, and they skew accordingly. So these glitches really are not glitches. They're imperfections that are made by the algorithm and whoever built the algorithm. That's why when we actually had a hearing in D.C. in my oversight committee, I was talking to the guy saying, listen, you're building your liberal algorithms because the people you hire, their biases are put into the algorithm. So why don't you have an equal split of conservatives and liberals? That way you're going to have kind of a mixture of those algorithms. But these aren't just glitches. These are built into the software. And so they're problematic.
Yeah, it just puts the whole thing in question, you know, the results and, you know, the uncertainty and people feeling like maybe their vote doesn't count. It puts the whole thing in question. And really, it's this is regardless of who wins this, whether it's Trump or Biden. I think if the shoe's on either foot, both sides are like, hey, it wasn't a fair election.
You're exactly right. Trust is a series of promises kept. And no one trusts the federal government. That's why the forensic audit. That's why I'm busy behind closed doors and trying to make sure that the governor calls a special session of the legislature so that they can convene and do this, actually order this forensic audit. It'll be the best money that Arizona spends because at least Arizona will be able to see transparently how the vote went and who the vote went to legally. That's all we ask. That's all that should be done. But it's going to take the governor to order that, the special session, and then the legislature to order it.
Do you think that Governor Ducey will reconvene the legislature to do this? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I certainly hope so. There's going to be a limited time frame, Jeff, and he knows that it had other people contact him. This is for the good of the republic. This isn't, for the good of one individual. Our personality. This is for the republic. This is to make sure that we trust our elections, that we hold people accountable. And that's the big thing, that there's no trust. You look at the 10 years I've been in Congress, we've had fast and furious, thank God, with the IRS, an attack on the press, the unmasking, the Hillary Clinton emails. You had Russiagate, you had Ukrainegate, you had Obamagate, and now Bidengate, and no one has paid the piper. Nobody's gone to jail. No one has been held up for scrutiny. That's the problem. And so America looks back and says, and it goes even to our elections, it was worthless. There's no accountability there. And that's what's problematic. And so I think that this is a great way to actually show it, that it's worth the money spent. And it points to our election process that we all ought to be on the same page, regardless of who wins.
Well, let me clarify something here, Congressman Gosar. Well, the governor would call the legislature back. Can the legislature, if he did this, can the legislature order a hand recount? What happens there?
Yeah, they could ask for a because the county supervisors answer to them, and they're the ones that dictate the election process. So they would have to order the forensic audit. If they don't, the only thing that happens is an audit is that they count the number of paper ballots, they check it against the tape on the machine. If they match up or close, that goes to the county board of supervisors for certification. So they would require the state legislature, from what my understanding has been from legal counsel, is that they would have to order the forensic audit.
Okay. Well, let me ask you, are you still optimistic for the president?
I am. I know I've been talking with the speaker, the majority leader, and some of the members of the House, and I think everybody should be on the same page, and we're trying to get accurate results. I think that only benefits the process and shows that Arizona is above board, making sure that all vote tabulations are honest and correct.
Yeah. Yeah. You think this was our first election. We've had a few.
Well, you think you'd have this all ironed out. We've been doing it for 20 years. But when Secretary of State like Katie Hobbs making a comment, and we actually highlighted it, I was elected to get Democrats elected. No, you weren't. You would oversee our election process in our state, not picking one party over another. And so that builds mistrust as well on one side of the aisle. And so from that standpoint, I think it all behooves us to make sure that, maybe if I'm a Democrat, I go, okay, we spent all these millions of dollars in the state House and state Senate, and we didn't win what we thought we were. Maybe they're upset that along that way. Maybe this will get some clarification there. So, once again, it's not about who wins. It's getting the process right. Good process builds good policy, builds good politics.
All right. It is amazing, Congressman, how much money was dumped into Arizona. I mean, you had District 17, and I think we're going to have Senator Mesnard on next week, a bunch of money, and he was able to withstand that Democrat challenge. And then LD6, Coral Evans, getting a ton of money in that race, record amounts of money. And it looks like now she's going to go on and be an advisor to Senator-elect Mark Kelly. But interesting to see all of this happen and then the blue wave really not happen in Arizona, except for maybe the presidency and the Senate.
Well, the thing about it is that this race tells you about good retail politics, getting out there like Brenda and Walt did, talking to people, putting the face up, making sure that they had the dialogue with people. Because people got to remember, they are the government. And when you have servants like those two, to get out, get it done. I tell you, you're in good hands regardless. And I think Republicans and Democrats saw through that and saw the uniqueness and the realness of those two people. So congratulations to them.
All right, Congressman, we'll let you go. Appreciate the updates. Let us know if you hear anything else.
Sounds good. Stay strong.
And of course, this up at talkwithjeff.com right now. Biden holds on to lead in Arizona with few votes remaining. It did definitely trend towards President Trump since we talked with Congressman Gosar on Tuesday. But now there's like 10,000 votes remaining, and Joe Biden's got a lead of 11,434. So those lawsuits in those other states are key now if President Trump has any hope of flipping this thing around. All right, folks, don't go anywhere. More to come. Hang tight. Back in a minute.
You're listening to The Jeff Horovitz Show. Be part of the program by calling 877-971-3971.
Well, you know me, I'm always doing projects around the house, as I know many of you are, and I'm always making trips to my good friends over at Homeco Lumber and Hardware, easy to find on Butler Avenue and Flagstaff. Now, I always got to get, 2x4s and plywood and drywall, things like that. And I'm very happy that they have a full service lumber yard where you can actually drive in and load your vehicle, like the good old days. And then if you got to go inside, maybe you have a nut or a bolt and you're trying to find a match. They have a whole aisle there. It's sometimes hard to find a match to that. They have what's called and what's rare today, customer service. Someone will actually help you out. Plus, they've got all kinds of tools, paint supplies, plumbing, electrical, anything you need for your home project. You can rely on my friends at Homeco Lumber and Hardware on Butler Avenue. And if you're a veteran, thanks for your service. With ID, they're going to give you 10% off their regular prices. And plus, they have a dedicated parking spot. Folks, go check out my friends over at Homeco Lumber and Hardware on Butler Avenue and Flagstaff and tell them I sent you.
This is the Jeff Horovitz Show on 97.1 The Big Talker.
Well, at least there's Democrat Joe Manchin of West Virginia, and I think earlier in the week I incorrectly said Pennsylvania, West Virginia. You know, he vowed to block Senate Dems from anything that's, you know, super crazy, which is a good sign. And he got into a bit of a tiff with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez over, you know, just how crazy she is, basically. Here's what Senator Joe Manchin wrote on, was his Twitter? Defund the police, ? Defund my butt. I'm a proud West Virginia Democrat. We are the party of working men and women. We want to protect Americans' jobs and health care. We do not have some crazy socialist agenda, and we do not believe in defunding the police. Now, I'm glad to hear this because I've said for a long time, the Democrats need to start standing up to the crazy in their party. And the crazy is really Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the like, and the socialists who have been taking over the Democrat Party. And I've said this often. I have plenty of friends and family that are Democrats that don't think like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, that don't want socialism, that don't want super high tax. They might want higher taxes, but they're not like, oh, let's you know, they're not into this, hey, free everything for everybody and et cetera, et cetera. A lot of successful people who have worked hard, who are entrepreneurs, who or worked hard, you know, for somebody else for a long time and saved money and maybe bought a house, et cetera, et cetera. They don't want crazy taking over their party. However, for far, far too long, most people have sat back, including people in the party, and not stood up to these nuts. So I'm glad to see that because, you know, one thing that I can tell you that is a positive that's come out of this election, and we've talked a lot about it this week, is the fact that the Democrats, with the exception of, if it holds, that Joe Biden, you know, has the votes and all the legal challenges are exhausted, which is probable, and he becomes the next president of the United States, and he has the House, you know, but maybe he doesn't maintain the Senate. We'll see if the Republicans can maintain their majority by winning the two Senate seats in January in the Senate runoff in Georgia. But the reality is there's a lot of folks in the Democrat Party, in the party like Ocasio-Cortez, who want absolute crazy for this country. And I've always thought in my heart that there were enough people out there, and I hope that they'll stand up. So seeing Senator Joe Manchin stand up and say, we don't believe in defunding the police. We do not have some crazy socialist agenda is good. I don't know if there'll be enough in the party or if it's been co-opted by the crazy leftists, if there's more of them. Now, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she quickly tweeted out. She didn't even say anything, I don't think. She just tweeted out one of those crazy eye pictures. You know, this woman's got like the crazy Charles Manson eyes. Have you ever seen her in her cooking videos where she's, you know, trying to connect with the regular folks around the country and she's got this huge, chopping knife and she's cutting up, of course, all vegetables. And she's sitting there just, you know, with her eyes bugged out saying, I'm going to do this. She just looks out of her freaking mind. Well, what'd she do? She tweets a picture. She's sitting behind Joe Manchin. And this is from one of the State of the Union addresses that President Trump did. And of course, she's sitting with the women that wear the all white, you know, folks like Kirkpatrick from Southern Arizona. She has this crazy death stare into the back of Joe Manchin's head. That's the picture she decides to tweet, which just compounds what Joe Manchin is saying. These people are out of their freaking mind. And I think they've lost so much in this election. Maybe they'll get the presidency. They're probably going to get the presidency. Yeah, they want a seat in Arizona for the Senate race with Senator-elect Mark Kelly. But they probably don't hold the Senate. And they lost somewhere between 6 and 10 seats in Congress, in the House. So there's this infighting going on right now. Pelosi's job is at risk, and we'll see if some Democrats and Republicans join together to try to get a Speaker of the House who still have her, their wits about them and isn't insane like Ocasio-Cortez. Maybe Ocasio will run. Anyway, folks, I'd love your thoughts. Go ahead and chime in. Go to the website, talkwithjeff.com. Talkwithjeff.com. We get a lot of articles up there to keep you up to date on things. Speaking of that, let's just review a couple of things that happened this week. Obviously, Biden, I talked about this earlier, holding on to his lead in Arizona. There's less than 10,000 votes remaining to count now, and his lead was over 11,000. So he has the electoral votes there, but we'll see what happens with the challenges in Pennsylvania and Michigan, among other states. And the title of that article, Biden holds on to lead in Arizona with few votes remaining. Go check that out. There's also some great posts up there. Senator-elect Wendy Rogers, that was the big news this week, clearly and decisively wins over Democrat challenger Felicia French, despite record amounts of money flooding into this district. And remember, I was the only show talking about this, the only media in Northern Arizona talking about this huge amount of money that's flooded into Northern Arizona in the LD6 race, about $6.5 million by my projections. We'll get the final numbers here pretty soon. Speaking of that, another article up at talkwithjeff.com, Coral Evans concedes, this happened a few days ago, conceded in the LD6 House race. She got beat by a couple thousand votes. Brenda Barton, and there's a great interview with Representative Brenda Barton up there. Actually, I think during the 5 o'clock hour, we'll have some of that, if not all that interview with Representative-elect Brenda Barton. But she conceded on Facebook. She congratulated Walt Blackman and Brenda Barton. And, you know, she also is kind of interesting. She actually pointed out in her post that she, quote, raised more money than any state House candidate in Arizona history, predominantly with small dollar donations. I don't think this is a trophy she should hold up. I think, quite frankly, she should be embarrassed. Embarrassed on a couple counts here. First of all, that she had $717,000 of money. The majority of that money came from out of state. It's not like she went to San Francisco, at least not to my knowledge. She's welcome to come on the show and dispute what I'm saying. Always welcome. It's not like, though, she went to San Francisco and knocked on doors and said, oh, I'm a great candidate. I want your money. No, these were outside groups that showered money upon her in small amounts, $5 up to 50, up to a couple hundred bucks. And so she's been going on national media. She had an interview on one of the national news outlets saying that, oh, I got record amounts and it's all small donations. Yeah, it's small donations because an outside group just targeted your district and thought it was a flip potential. And you got so much money from San Francisco. She got nearly double the amount of money from San Francisco than she got from her hometown of Flagstaff. To me, that's embarrassing. It's embarrassing that you got 51%+, probably much more, because we can't trace all the money due to the individual small contributions under 50 bucks. But we know for sure she got over 51% of her money from out of state. Probably much more. We know that she only got about 9% of her money from the district she was going to represent. And she goes on in her post to say how proud she is of her, you know, her record race, more money than any state house candidate in Arizona history, predominantly with small dollar donations. You go. So she lost that race. But the big news this week was, hey, you can lose a race, right? But if, you know, if people decide to invest a lot of money in you, you still kind of win. And for her, she got a big prize here. Coral Evans, again, up at talkwithjeff.com. Coral Evans is now on Senate-elect Mark Kelly's transition team. Out of all the people in Arizona, what, 7.2, 7.3 million people, Mark Kelly has decided, you know, on a 13-member transition team. And one of the 13 people out of all of the 7.3 million people he could have decided on is Mayor of Flagstaff Coral Evans will be guiding Mark Kelly into his seat as Arizona's next senator. I'd love your thoughts, folks. Please go to talkwithjeff.com. Click on these articles. Comment within the articles. We're really working hard to get all this information out to you. All right. Earlier in the week, we did catch up with George Califf from Data Orbital, who's been great this whole election process, keeping us up to date. There's some great information in here, especially when it comes to where Arizona stands, but also what the recount process is here in Arizona. Here's what George had to say.
Now, I will say the counting, just to update listeners, the counting will be ending, from everything that I have been told, by the end of this week. Mm. All of the counties in Maricopa County actually looks to finish the bulk of their remaining ballots. I think FEMA is on that track as well. So we currently have about 45,000 ballots to count, probably a little bit less than that now. And a good percentage of those are provisional ballots, which means that they had some sort of issue. They were, you know, couldn't match ID. They were people that had been mailed a ballot but then wanted to vote in person. So those take a bit more time. But I am told that the counting will be done by the end of this week.
Well, last time we spoke, George, it looked like President Trump had a decent shot if the votes trended a certain way. It looks like he's about, 12 or 13,000 votes now behind Joe Biden?
12,800.
Okay. Is there enough? Is this even feasible for him to flip into the first place position with what's left? Give us your thoughts on that.
I do not believe so. Okay. I believe that the margin will continue to tighten. There's no doubt about it. We probably will end up between 5,000 to 7,000 margin for Biden. I do not believe, and with how he has been doing with some of these subsequent drops, he has been doing well, but in Maricopa County, unfortunately, not well enough for him to be able to take the lead back.
And that's what we were just talking about, because we get a little skewed perspective up here where we see a different level of support. And it's been some of the, like Navajo County and some of these places, Yavapai, been coming in heavily for President Trump. What if it gets to the 5,000 to 8,000 range, which I think you're right. I mean, it's kind of heading that way. What triggers a recount in Arizona? Would we be there?
We would not be there. I've actually gotten this question a lot, and even I had inaccurately stated at first that it would be 0.1%, which would be about 3,400. But there's also a rule that it's either 0.1% or 200, the lesser of the two.
Oh.
We're actually, it would need to be 200 votes, and we are definitely not on pace to be at the 200 vote mark.
That's crazy, because I'm looking at the results.arizona.vote, and ballots cast as of right now is 3.387 million. So let's say when this is all done, 3.4 million ballots cast and 200. I mean, that's a tiny, tiny amount.
It is. And I don't know, that may be something that legislators are going to look at when we get back into session. I know that there's a lot that's going to be looked at from an election reform perspective. This may be it. Because, look, the 0.1%, I can get it. That would be about 3,400 votes. I think that that's pretty reasonable. I don't know where the 200, the lesser of the two. I don't know at what point that got into our statute. But, yes, it is a very small margin in Arizona, almost impossible to hit, quite frankly, statewide.
Well, George, my guess would be it's old. You know, when Arizona was a very small population and they never updated it.
That's true.
That'd be my guess, but you know what they say about assuming things. what's next for, and I'm going to try to get maybe Rudy Giuliani back on the show or some folks from the Trump campaign as well. I know there's some legal action happening in Arizona, but it seems to be out of a small amount of votes. I talked to Congressman Gosar yesterday. I mean, is there any... If we get down to 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 votes, is there really anything to do? Do you see Arizona being a battleground for, on the legal front? Any thoughts on that?
So the lawsuits that I've seen thus far have, as you said, will only affect a small number of votes. Now, even one fraudulent vote is one fraudulent vote. So I think people that say, well, why are we fighting over 181 overvotes? Because those are 181 votes that should be there. So, I mean, I think it just is what it is. We only should be counting legal votes. From what I have been told privately, what I'm seeing publicly, I do not believe that there is something legally on the horizon that would move for 5,000 votes anywhere in that range. The one thing that I have heard, and again, this one is very difficult to prove and difficult to even investigate, quite frankly, is the whole vote flipping and the software for Dominion and what that looks like. There's been an immense controversy around that.
That
the best thing I can think of to remedy that would be what we're doing, we've done in Maricopa, and it's going to happen statewide, which is the hand count audit of 2% of voting centers. There are folks that are trying to get it to be 5% of voting centers. That's imperfect, but that's about as close that I can see that we're going to get to verifying, did the software in fact change anything, or do the ballots match what the results actually show?
George, I have a question on that. So if they do, let's say, a 5% hand count, does that 5% have to match percentage-wise what the total vote was for that county? Or, I mean, and if it doesn't, does that trigger something else?
So what they're looking for, I think, is pretty close to zero variance, right? Because any amount of variance, I think, would cause a problem. I don't know that a lot has been contemplated. It obviously would trigger something. I don't know that we've ever had it triggered. So I'm not sure that a lot has been contemplated on what happens if there is a variant. Because again, we've never had this issue at this level. I mean, look, state of Arizona, I think, and everyone would agree, I mean, we've never had our elections called into questions. I mean, you know, it's been pretty normal. I mean, we look at places like Chicago and Philadelphia and other cities like that and be like, oh yeah, that's a them problem, not an us problem. So it definitely would trigger something. I don't know if it would trigger a full recount by hand. Obviously, that would take an immense amount of time. I don't know that we would be necessarily set up. I'm sure there'd be a lot of people that would volunteer. But I think that they're looking for as close to zero of a variance as possible, because any variance is problematic, especially when you're only sampling a small percentage of the ballots like that.
George, we just had a bunch of hands go up for volunteers, but I don't know. We might be disqualified. George, okay, just real quick, last question for you. We're looking at Georgia. It looks like a hand recount has been triggered there.
Yeah.
We're looking at the issues in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. Those are the ones that rise to the top of my head here. Is there anything there? I mean, I know you follow Arizona mostly, but what do you think?
Yeah, so Georgia, as you said, is going to go through a full hand count, hand recount. I don't know. I'm sure votes always change when you do a recount. I don't know that they're going to change at this point. I believe it's north of 10,000 to lead for Biden. I don't know that there's enough to change it there. I think, and quite frankly, I think people, observers are saying, look, doesn't matter what happens in Georgia, Nevada, Arizona, if something doesn't happen in Pennsylvania, Biden still gets 273. So I think Pennsylvania really is the holy grail that has to kind of have something be done with. And there, what they're arguing about are the ballots that arrived after the 3rd of November within those 3 days cutoff that the court said that, A, that was okay to do. But there's only about 10,000 ballots, which even if all those were thrown out, much less, from what I understand, much less than the margin that Biden's leading by. The other thing that they're arguing about are the votes that arrived by mail. I don't know how the courts, I mean, unless, again, there's systemic fraud with that, I don't know how the courts just say, hey, all these ballots arrived by mail don't count, because at the time that the people voted them, it was legal. Someone told them that it was okay. So it's a very precarious position. But to me, it all comes back to Pennsylvania. It all comes back to Pennsylvania.
Yeah, so they'll have to fight it out there.
Hey, George, one quick question. Does Georgia use the Dominion software also?
That I do not know. I know a lot of states do. I am not sure specifically about Georgia.
Because something that was running through my mind is they're going to do an actual hand count audit in Georgia. If they find some serious issues and they've used the same software, would that trigger anything in the other states that use it?
Yeah, a red flag.
Not automatically, but I think what you said, Jeff, it would trigger a red flag that would maybe empower some elected officials to push and say, okay, we need to look at something in Arizona. But I do not know off the top of my head if Georgia is a Dominion state.
Yeah, but there ain't much time to do any of this. That's the interesting stuff here, is that, you know, you have till what, December, early December?
November 30th, actually.
November 30th, yeah.
On the canvas, yeah.
All right, folks, a lot of information there. And if you missed anything this week, all of our shows are podcast interview extras. Plus, we spend a lot of time getting posts up there for you, keep you up to date on things happening here in Arizona and beyond. Go to talkwithjeff.com.